Greetings. This is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, November 14th, 2025. And we'll begin with the front page. Report cards. Majority of districts see drop in absenteeism. The good news. 29 of 47 area districts saw a decline last school year in chronic absentees, defined by the state as students who missed 10% or more of school days, either with or without a valid excuse. That left just 12 on the wrong side of the state average, 25.4, according to recently released report card data from the Illinois State Board of Education. Ahead of our November 28th overview of how schools fared in dozens of metrics, here's a look at a point of emphasis throughout the year, student attendance. And it has a long table of schools and how they did with their attendance rates and their change. The next front page story is University of Illinois Extension. SNAP Ed program aims to make most of final months. Story by Jana Wiersema out of Champaign. An initiative of the University of Illinois Extension that is set to end next year is still working to address food insecurity and nutrition in its final months. UI Extension's SNAP Ed program, also known as Eat, Move, Save, is currently running a holiday food drive to help those struggling in Champaign County. Because of the government shutdown, because of SNAP benefits being halted, because they're receiving less benefits than they normally do, and food pantries are receiving less food, we felt this was a crucial and important time to host this, UI SNAP Ed educator Tracy Bowden said, prior to government reopening. It could be November 20 before SNAP benefits are restored statewide to all 1.9 million residents and businesses that rely on them, the Illinois Department of Human Services said in a statement Thursday. Bowden said that beneficiaries of the food drive will include Champaign County pantries beyond just Champaign-Urbana. UI Extension is also looking at partnering with other sites that feed low-income families, such as Head Start locations and schools or daycares that see a significant amount of these households, she added. As families navigate the fallout of recent disruptions to SNAP, the local SNAP Ed program is also dealing with the impacts of decisions made at the federal level. In August, the UI's College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences announced that the extension-led Eat, Move, Save program would be ending due to the elimination of federal funding for SNAP education, which promotes nutrition education for individuals who qualify for SNAP. This will result in the loss of 217 staff members across the state of Illinois, which is more than a quarter of Extension's workforce. As of October 1, funds for this program won't be available, ACE's Dean German Bolero said in a previous interview. However, there is a route that is allowing the program to stay active for a little while longer, said Jennifer McCaffrey, Assistant Dean for Family and Consumer Sciences Programs at UI Extension. We were notified by the USDA that we could use any remaining funds that we had from the previous fiscal year, she said. This leaves Extension with enough funding to cover its team throughout February. McCaffrey said, Extension is now operating a reduced SNAP Ed programming schedule as staffers begin to leave ahead of the layoffs. According to McCaffrey, most team members will be gone by February 14, 2026, but a few will remain until June to help with the final wrap-up. She added that the college and Bolero remain committed to supporting nutrition and nutrition security moving forward and are looking at how the College of ACES and Extension can continue this work after SNAP Ed's elimination. We hope in the new year to be able to report how we will serve the state as we go into 2026 in that capacity, McCaffrey said. While a large part of our team is going away, it doesn't mean that we stop doing this completely. We're just going to look different. Collection for the holiday food drive will run through November 26th, and items will be distributed to local food pantries and households in need. Non-perishable items can be dropped off at the Extension's office at 801 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on weekdays. Suggested donations include canned goods, pasta, rice, cereal, and other shelf-stable items, extension officials said. Unfortunately, we don't have the refrigeration or freezer space to do turkeys or hams or anything, Bowden said. But most definitely, if there's potatoes, because those are going to be shelf-stable for quite some time, or boxed items such as stuffing or cranberry sauce, or any of those key staple items for Thanksgiving or Christmas time, we would love to accept those. She also noted that another helpful resource is the program's Find Food IL online map, which shows sites throughout the state that provide free food or accept SNAP, LINC, or WIC benefits. Bowden added that both the Eastern Illinois Food Bank and the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District have compiled lists of food pantries. The next story on the front page is a picture, Feeding a Desperate Need. Sue Bolin counts bags full of food donations for families in need Thursday afternoon at the Salvation Army. She, along with five other volunteers, filled more than 250 bags in one afternoon. Then continues on in the Our Communities page. Salvation Army. Food pantry copes with increasing need. Story by Rob Lacates, out of Champaign. Hundreds of families walked the halls of the Salvation Army, waiting in line for their share, some desperately pocketing an extra package of muffins, all with one thing on the mind: food. While the state-funded food assistance program, SNAP, is set to resume now that President Donald Trump has signed the bill ending the government shutdown, in the here and now, many local residents remain hungry because of the freeze that disrupted November's funding. Blessings come in different forms, and one of the nonprofit's full-time volunteers prayed for at least a single pallet of green beans to give struggling families. For the last 3.5 years, Sue Bolin has spent her days unloading, stocking, packing, and distributing mountains of brown paper sacks filled with food, a constantly necessary cycle. It is amazing how many families come in with 3 to 5 children, and you see the hunger and need in their eyes, Bolin said. We want to do the most we can and treat everyone with dignity and respect. Melissa Sivels, the Salvation Army's core officer, said the long-standing partnership with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank has helped provide additional food for families. Eastern Illinois Food Bank is a great partner to us, and they provide a lot to us that we're able to then give out to the community, to the people who need it most, Sivels said. Trucks drop off food 4 times a week to the Salvation Army, which helps fill bags. The last 2 months of the year typically have more hungry mouths, the holidays being one reason. More than 250 people visited the pantry on the first Monday of November, and the number of visits only seems to keep climbing. We know that the need is out there, so we're really just trying our best to do what we can, Sivers said. The food bank provides families with a paper care package once every month, with 2 to 3 bread items and fresh produce available for pickup every day. Volunteers helped compile and fill more than 250 bags last Thursday, each one containing roughly $25 worth of food. People handing out sacks evenly distribute fresh produce, canned goods, non-perishables, sweets, and meat, when available, to feed as many people as possible. Meat has always been a hot commodity, especially now, as prices have jumped and state-aided funds grow slimmer. So alternative proteins, like beans and yogurt, are finding their place in the bags. Treats like cakes or cookies also find their way into the donations. The sheer amount of households in need skyrocketed 50% from the last week of October to the first one of November. During October, the pantry saw around 100 homes a day and fed around 400 people a day. The need for our food pantry carts has gone through the roof, and it's beyond a challenge to try and keep up and have the supplies to feed the people what we feel like we need to feed them, Bolin said. Those bags are then deposited into carts for in-need families to pick up alongside their designated bread and produce items. Families across the spectrum steer their carts to the vehicles outside, and despite the generosity of the food pantry people, they occasionally grab extra items on their way out. As need increases, so does the required manpower. The additional help is supplemented by regular volunteers and college students. It just varies depending on the day. A month ago, it started to get heavier, and right now, honest to goodness, it's insane, Boland said. It's hard to keep up, almost impossible. The organization has had to pull a lot of the social workers to help with this, because 3 to 4 people can't do the job. Volunteering at the food pantry is as easy as walking in and helping out. No matter what someone may be able to do, there are roles to be filled. Of the 6 volunteers present last Thursday, 2 were U of I students. Dana Reed, who helped a month prior, brought her friend Lily Montalva for her first time. The two worked from 10 a.m. to around 1:30 p.m. when the pantry reached maximum capacity for bags. Reed said that as resources start to thin out, around 17 other Eastern Associated food banks across town help to provide additional necessities. I think it is very vital that there are places like this and that have resources for people, and it's really important that it is accessible for people, that it's a good location, she said. It is very disappointing what is happening today with food benefits. Montalva, who recently joined a service-oriented fraternity, volunteered to help as many people as she could. The Greek group partners directly with the Salvation Army to help. Their roughly 4 hours of work went by quickly and busily, as everyone shuffled around the pantry back to back, they said. There are so many people who need help, Montalva said. I think the fact that this many people need help with food stamps in general is a problem in itself. I'm just grateful that I can help out with this. And the final front page story is Cunningham Children's Home, Hallowed Grounds. Colleen Combs, Wright, event and volunteer specialist at Cunningham Children's Home in Urbana, gives a tour of the campus to new hires and faculty on Thursday. For a look back at the history of the Child Welfare and Educational Services Agency celebrating its 130th anniversary, flip to A8 and 9. This is mainly a picture spread, but I'll go ahead and read. To see every child thrive. On January 31st, 1895, Judge Joseph and Mary Cunningham deeded their home and 15 acres to the women of the Methodist Episcopal Church for a deaconess home and orphanage. Doors opened on October 25th, and in its first year, it served 25 babies and children, many from households whose parents needed help because of the death of one parent, divorce, sickness, etc. In 1921, a new separate corporation was formed, and the name was changed to Cunningham Children's Home, Incorporated of Urbana. In the ensuing decades, there have been 3 constants: children and families in need, United Methodist women as keepers of the trust, and changing and increasing demands in resources. Now celebrating its 130th anniversary, Cunningham and its more than 400 employees serve nearly 1,000 youth and families each year through 16 residential, educational, and community-based programs. It continues to hold itself to the highest possible standards in meeting the needs of those it serves and remains committed to its mission to nourish hope through effective solutions so children thrive and families flourish. I'll go ahead and read these picture inset. Among Cunningham's leaders through the years. Above left, Sarah English, hired in 1949, who challenged the board to learn more about the developmental needs of children living there and hire social workers to work with them. Above right, Ed Odom, who succeeded English in December 1960, held a master's degree in social work and was grounded in both the Methodist social welfare traditions and professional social work. Below left, Tom Powell, a former resident, is hired as executive director in 1976, after Cunningham had firmly established itself as a residential treatment center for youth who have come out of abusive and neglectful situations. Below center, Sam Banks, appointed executive director in 1988, would stay in that role for the next 20 years, overseeing construction of the Kendall Gill Community Boys Group home near Urbana High and Middle Schools in 1995, and doubling in size of the main campus a year later with the purchase of 17 acres immediately to the north. Below right, current president and CEO Marlon Livingston, who began his tenure in 2008, was born and raised in Charleston, and has a master's in social work from the University of Illinois. Then there's another of the history. Clockwise from top left, children in the nursery in Sheldon Hall in the 1910s. Children on a seesaw in front of Sheldon Hall in the 1920s. Deaconesses with the Women's Home Missionary Society. Forerunner of the United Methodist Church's United Women in Faith program on the campus in the early 1900s. Orphans at the home in its earliest years, and the boys' dormitory on the second floor of Sheldon Hall in the 1920s. And then the community section is another set of pictures. Clockwise from top left, people attend the first Festival of Quilts in 2005 at Lincoln Square in Urbana, a fundraiser inspired by the tradition of giving quilts to those who arrive at Cunningham. Former University of Illinois men's basketball star Kendall Gill gets a look at the court named in honor of his 30 years of support and fundraising in the Lou and Mary Henson Gym. CEO Marlon Livingston helps Vic and Bonnie Baraglio cuts the ribbon on Miss Bonnie's Cup of Hope coffee shop in the Rachel Ann Cottage. And art teacher Evelyn Tardy shows the fall project inspired by Peter H. Reynolds' children's book, The Dot, in which a young student learns that even the simplest mark can grow into something wonderful. Each student created their own unique dot, which together formed a vibrant collaborative artwork celebrating creativity and forming the number 130 in honor of the anniversary. Turning now to national and world news, U.S. government, restart underway. It will likely take days for lingering effects of 43-day shutdown, i.e. travel snarls, funding gaps, to abate. Story by Dave Goldinger, New York Daily News, TNS. The federal government slowly started to reopen Thursday, but things remain far from normal after President Donald Trump signed a Republican government funding bill that narrowly passed both houses of Congress to end the longest shutdown in U.S. history. Air travel remained snarled, with hundreds more flights canceled and delayed, but experts said things would slowly return to normal as the busy Thanksgiving holiday approaches. Furloughed federal workers were expected to return to work in coming days and receive back pay from missed paychecks, along with essential workers like air traffic controllers and airport security screeners who were forced to work without pay during the record 43-day shutdown. Millions of low-income recipients of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, benefits, some of whom received partial or no payments for November, are expected to receive full payments in coming days. The spending bill did not include any provision to extend tax credits for Obamacare health insurance premiums, a key demand made by Democrats that originally sparked the shutdown on October 1st. That means more than 20 million Americans still face sharply higher premiums as the year-end open enrollment period is in full swing. Trump, who is burdened by low approval ratings, blamed Democrats for the shutdown, while opinion polls say most Americans point the finger at him and his GOP allies for refusing to work with the opposition party. "I just want to tell the American people you should not forget this," Trump said Wednesday night at the White House. "When we come up to midterms and other things, don't forget what they've done to our country." The signing ceremony with Republican lawmakers came just hours after the House passed the GOP measure on a mostly party line vote of 222 to 209, with a handful of moderate Democrats, including Long Island Rep. Tom Suozzi, crossing the aisle to back the measure. The Senate passed the measure Monday after a handful of Democrats effectively caved to Republican demands. Democratic leaders vowed to keep fighting for an extension of the Obamacare subsidies, with a vote expected in the Senate in December. House lawmakers hope to force House Speaker Mike Johnson to permit a vote, which he has so far refused to do. "This fight is not over," said Representative Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat of New York, the minority leader. "We're just getting started." The compromise funds three annual spending bills and extends the rest of government funding through the end of January, when another shutdown fight could take place. The bill includes a reversal of the firing of federal workers by the Trump administration since the shutdown began. It also protects federal workers against further layoffs through January and guarantees they are paid once the shutdown is over. It doesn't force Trump to restore funding for infrastructure plans like the Democratic states in the new Hudson River rail tunnel that the president vowed to cancel to punish Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York. The bill for the U.S. Department of Agriculture means food assistance programs like SNAP and Aid for Women, Infants, and Children, WIC, all will be funded without threat of interruption through the rest of the budget year that runs through September 2026. The biggest point of partisan dispute remains the expiring extended enhanced tax credit that makes health insurance more affordable through marketplaces for the Affordable Care Act, the official name of Obamacare. Some Republicans say they want to negotiate a compromise with Democrats. GOP leaders mostly oppose the credits and have fought for more than a decade to undermine or even repeal the ACA. All they have done is try to eliminate access to health care in our country. The country is catching on to them, said Representative Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic elder stateswoman who recently announced her retirement. Without the tax credits, average premiums could more than double for millions of Americans. More than 2 million people would lose health insurance coverage altogether next year, the Congressional Budget Office projects. And the story inside of that is House vote on Epstein files expected next week. A bill ordering the release of all files related to the Jeffrey Epstein case is expected to come to a vote in the House of Representatives next week and is shaping up to win lopsided bipartisan approval despite President Donald Trump's steadfast resistance. Republican Speaker Mike Johnson, who has resisted the measure at Trump's behest for months, pulled a U-turn late Wednesday and vowed to schedule a vote a few days after critics reached the needed 218 signatures on an unusual legislative petition. After a flurry of Epstein emails mentioning Trump were released Wednesday, several GOP lawmakers said they will vote for the measure. Supporters of the bill predicted scores of Republican votes will eventually defect, even if Trump continues to ratchet up pressure on them to oppose it. The bill would then head to the Senate, where Democrats would seek to mount a similar pressure campaign to force Majority Leader Senator John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, to permit a vote, which would require a 60-vote supermajority to pass over a filibuster in the chamber that Republicans control 53-47. Liberal Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat of California, and Conservative Representative Thomas Massie, Republican of Kentucky, both predicted Republicans will wind up voting en masse for their Epstein file disclosure bill once it lands on the House floor. Even Republican congressional leaders predict up to half of the 219 House Republicans may wind up voting for the measure when it hits the floor for an up or down vote. Johnson had dug in his heels for months on the Epstein files bill, even after the discharge petition to force a vote gained support of four Republicans along with all 213 Democrats. It hit the needed majority of 218 when the government shutdown ended and Johnson finally swore in Representative Adelita Grijalva, Democrat of Arizona, 50 days after she won a special election to become the 214th House Democrat. Some Capitol Hill insiders had expected Johnson to continue to delay a vote until sometime in December, with Byzantine procedural roadblocks while Trump and GOP leaders sought to flip some of the Republican defectors. That story was by Dave Goldinger. The next story is in state news. Capital News, Illinois. Release of higher edge funding urged. Governor's office says it's awaiting signs of stability in federal policies. Story by Peter Hancock. Out of Springfield. University students and faculty urged the Illinois Board of Higher Education to press Governor J.B. Pritzker to release more than $29 million in funding for state colleges and universities that state lawmakers approved this year, but the Pritzker administration is holding back. The governor's office said in an email to Capital News Illinois that it does not intend to release the state-approved funding until it sees stability on federal education policy coming from Washington. President Donald Trump's budget bill and reckless tariffs have wreaked havoc on state revenues nationwide, making it essential to double down on fiscal discipline, a spokesman in the governor's office said. Advocates for releasing the funds spoke this week during the public comment portion of an IBHE business meeting held on the campus of Elgin Community College. They included faculty members who are members of University Professionals of Illinois, a collective bargaining unit within the Illinois Federation of Teachers that represents about 3,000 employees across 8 public university campuses in the state. In addition to requesting the release of the $29 million, advocates also called on the IBHE board to endorse legislation that would overhaul funding of the state's higher education system, putting it on a needs-based formula similar to the evidence-based funding formula used for grades K-12 education. Years of underfunding by the state have forced most Illinois public universities to increase tuition, cut programs, and reduce staff, said UPI Vice President Keith Nyquist, a business instructor at Northern Illinois University. We have to look no further than at what's going on at Western Illinois University, and most recently at Eastern Illinois University, where dozens and dozens of staff and faculty have had their positions terminated, and they're on their way out because of the lack of funding. Money held back. In his budget proposal to the General Assembly in February, Pritzker proposed a 3% increase in higher education funding. But the $55.3 billion budget funding bill that lawmakers approved in May contained only a 1% increase, with an additional 2%, or $29.5 million, that could be distributed only after the purpose and amounts have been approved in writing by the governor. Democratic leaders in the General Assembly said at the time the money was intended to be used if there were significant cuts in federal higher education spending. But in its statement this week, the governor's office said it was always Pritzker's intention to hold the money back as a cushion against uncertainties caused by the Trump administration. When the budget was approved by the legislature and signed, the governor was clear that a 2% reserve would remain in place until we saw stability in education from Washington, which had yet to materialize, the statement said. In addition to holding back the higher education funding, Pritzker issued an executive order in September directing executive branch agencies to make plans to hold back as much as 4% of their budgets this year. The IBHE and Illinois Community College Board were not subject to that order. Kimberly Britt, a junior psychology major at Chicago State University, said that for her, as well as many students and teachers at campuses across the state, the issue was not about national politics. The 2% being withheld might seem small on paper, but its impact is immense, she said. It determines whether a student can stay enrolled, whether a professor can continue teaching full-time, and whether Chicago State can continue being the beacon of opportunity it has been for generations. IU systems cut. In addition to calling for release of the funds, several of the advocates who spoke Wednesday called for IBHE to openly support overhauling the way higher education funding is allocated among the state's public universities. Of the $29.5 million that Pritzker is holding in reserve, the largest portion, $12.9 million, is earmarked for the University of Illinois system. The rest would be divided among the state's 8 other public university systems, the Illinois Community College Board, and City Colleges of Chicago. That distribution formula would change drastically under legislation that was introduced earlier this year, but which did not pass out of a key legislative committee, largely due to opposition from the UI. And we are going to take a short break before we continue with this story and our second half hour. So this is the News Gazette, Friday, November 14th, 2025. And please stay tuned. We'll be right back.